Hello and welcome once again, everybody, to the Spitballin' Podcast. I'm Ben Rogers, joined by Jamie Newberg. This is a Texas Rangers podcast and the biggest news in Rangers land. I think the biggest thing that's got Rangers fans buzzing, Jamie, is the arrival of Nomar Mazara. He's been phenomenal already since he's arrived. He's really captured the imaginations of Rangers fans as he's filled in for Shin-Soo Choo, who's gone on the DL. Nobody more familiar with the Rangers minor league system than you, so let's dive right in. And just tell me, why is Nomar Mazara special?
Why is he special? Well, he's special because he's 20 years old, and he does everything pretty well. And I think we've even seen since he's come up, he's a better defensive right fielder than he was even given credit for by the publications that call him one of the top 10 prospects in baseball. He's level-headed. He's got the kind of makeup that you don't expect out of a kid, let alone a veteran, that promises that he's going to be able to make adjustments. He's going to be able to bounce back from slumps and adversity and be the kind of player that can grow into a leader on a team. But you know, most importantly, the thing that makes him a great prospect is he hits good pitching. He has good instincts for the game. He's clearly not overwhelmed, as we saw the way he just sort of exploded onto big league pitching when he arrived far sooner than expected. And it was clearly only because of an injury. The Texas was not going to rush him to the big leagues. But he's the whole package. And when you see a player at that age handle himself the way he has at the outset, you can't be anything but excited.
Man, it's funny because now with the arrival of Nomar Mazara on the heels of years and years of talk about trading prospects for guys to win now, I think Ranger fans are really able to see, okay, this is what happens if you hold on to a guy and you have him. But I think it's also an important crossroads moment because, you know, there's rumors coming out every day. Okay, the Rangers could be interested in acquiring another Cole Hamels-type pitcher, a frontline starter, but it would be expensive. And so I think it's important as you're trying to weigh all that in your mind and think, is it worth it to trade prospects for guys who help you win now? Because you have to consider it very carefully because some of these guys, even at 20, can help you win now, and that's the cost of doing business. So in your mind, let's just jump in here, is Nomar Mazara untouchable?
Well, to say he's untouchable would be to say that he's the number one value in all of baseball, and that's not true. If the Angels were to say, hey, you know what, we kind of like give you Mike Trout, but Mazara's got to be in the deal, then he's in the deal. So no, he's not untouchable, but I would say he's pretty close to being off the table in any realistic discussion that the Rangers might have. And when you talk about starting pitching, the Rangers are going to be rumored to be after a frontline starting pitcher every single year. That's just the nature of how this ownership group and front office thinks. They're poised to win, and every July they're looking for ways to get better, and no team ever says, well, our rotation doesn't need help. You always look for that boost in the front in the rotation, and so they'll always be looking for that. And what we saw last summer when they got Hamels and Jake Diekman, you know, thrown in, this farm system was deep enough and will continue to be deep enough where you can trade guys that aren't that you don't consider your top two or three players. You can still make impact deals by going to that next tier because this system is deep enough in front level prospects.
Man, I'm loving watching him. I mean, he is so fun to watch. He's you talk about his defense. He's had already a really nice diving catch out there. His arm looks really good. He settled right into the two hole, which was a little surprising. A lot of times you put a young guy like that in the back of the lineup to put less pressure on him. But I kind of like this move because with the big hitters he's got hitting behind him, he's probably more likely to see good pitches. In addition to which, if Delino's in front of him causing havoc on the base pass, that's kind of all those things kind of lend themselves to a genius move by Bannister to put him in the two hole.
And I would add one more thing to that, and all that's absolutely true. But going back to what we were talking about a minute ago, his makeup is such that I think Jeff Bannister knew this kid's not going to be overwhelmed by putting him in the on-deck circle when the game starts. You know, he's not a guy that needs to be in the eight hole just to take pressure off. He seems unfazed by the pressure. He rises to that level without having to – you don't have to baby this guy. There's other prospects where you have to – you know that you're going to – there's going to be an acclimation process just emotionally. Mazara seems like he's been ready for this for years.
But it's a game of adjustments, and so pitchers will adjust to Mazara, and they'll find a weakness, and they'll exploit it, and then he'll face a heavy slump, and he'll have to overcome the adversity by adjusting and growing and developing. What makes you confident that Nomar Mazara will be able to do that?
Just if you look at his minor league development, what he, you know, his first couple seasons, he really struggled after signing the huge $5 million bonus. He struggled a little bit. He had to adjust. He had a huge leg kick that he had to erase and sort of reteach himself how to swing the bat, or not swing the bat, but, you know, how to approach a pitch. And he did it. He did it and rocketed up to the big leagues. He's already proven he can make adjustments as a hitter. And again, you get you talk about a kid that is advanced in terms of his maturity. He knows he's going to have to make adjustments. He's already done in the minor leagues. He'll have to do it in the big leagues. But you bet on a guy like that more than you would someone that you didn't have that much confidence in from a character standpoint.
What, you know, with his situation contractually, there's been a lot of talk about that. You know, if he stays down in the minors for a little bit longer, the Rangers would have a full other year of team control of the player. You know, what happens if he plays so well that they can't send him down?
Well, let me address that contractual issue first, because I think that's close to hogwash when you talk about a player that you're expecting to be a core member of your team, because he's never going to reach the end of that 6 year. He will have signed a long-term deal here before that. Now, it's not going to be like Evan Longoria, where he's going to sign one in the next couple weeks and be locked up for 7 years. But by his third or fourth year, sort of like along the same lines as Rougned Odor, before he even gets into arbitration years, if he is the player they think he is, he's going to sign a deal that takes him past that sixth year where the service time is not going to become an issue. Okay. So that, I mean, that's the first thing. And as far as whether you send him down because of procedural reasons when everybody's healthy, that's just going to depend on that moment in time. If he's playing well and contributing at a level that maybe he's doing more than some other veteran outfielders are providing, then he's going to keep playing. I mean, we got to factor Josh Hamilton into this equation, because his arrival is probably going to be sooner than shoes if his rehab goes as planned. What are you going to do at that point? Do you bring Josh back into lineup, another left-handed bat? If you do that, does it cut into Mazara's time? And I would say absolutely not, unless Mazara has been unable to adjust to that point and is struggling.
Okay, so let's do a little over-under action, because I like to talk about upside. And it's a dangerous thing to do when you're talking about prospects, but they're not listening, so we won't put any extra pressure on them. But let's talk Nomar Mazara upside. His best year as a hitter, over the course of a full season, of course, his average will be higher or lower. His best season as a major league hitter will be higher or lower than .295.
Oh, higher. Oh, yeah. Were you talking about his best season?
Yeah.
I think Mazara is the kind of guy that, if it all comes together, .295 could be sort of a career average. You know, he could be a guy that hits .280, .290 regularly and has a spike year or two where he hits .315. I mean, he's that kind of hitter where, I mean, we've seen it. He fouls off good pitches. He can have an 8-pitch at bat where you get him down. I want to say that 5 or 6 of his first 7 hits were with 2 strikes. I mean, his approach is good. That's where batting average grows out of, when you are not an easy out and you put the ball in play. And he's demonstrated that he can put the ball in play. He's not a batting title type of guy, but I bet you he's going to have years where he gets over that 300 mark.
Okay, over under on home runs. His best home run year in the majors. The over-under is 27.5.
I think 27.5 is a pretty good. I mean, I'd say 25 to 30 is sort of the sweet spot, and he may have a year or two where he exceeds that. This is selling him short. We're talking about a 20-year-old who's gotten better every year in the minor leagues. Like, as he goes up a level, he gets better. It's not supposed to work that way necessarily. You know, maybe he finds his power stroke in a way where he's sort of like Mike Trout. I doubt anybody said, as Mike Trout was coming up through his minor league system, this guy's going to hit 40 home runs and be that kind of talent. What they saw was a burner that could hit for average with some pop. Who knows how Mazara's power will develop, but I think 25 to 30 is a fairly safe indication. You saw what he did off of Weaver. I mean, that ball he hit 443 feet, I want to say, was at the time the 5th longest ball hit in the major leagues this season. And he did it in his first or second game.
Good God. He's Jamie Newberg. I'm Ben Rogers. This is Spitball on a Texas Rangers podcast. Today's focus is on Nomar Mazara. And obviously, look, we're in the honeymoon phase here with Nomar Mazara. People are excited, and he's been incredible, and he hasn't struggled yet. But I think back to last year, there was a honeymoon that took place with Joey Gallo. I can remember being in Arlington for his first game, and he goes deep, and there's, Joey chants, and it was unbelievable. And that was a massive honeymoon. but it tailed off quickly and he struggled the rest of the year. And man, this drives me crazy to see people. I don't understand why, when talking about Nomar Mazara and his success, people feel compelled to drive over on the shoulder of the road and run over Joey Gallo. He's not even in the road you're driving on. Why are you bringing up Joey Gallo? And I've seen so many people talk about Gallo's not going to make it. He's not going to. He's 22 years old. He's 22 and people are giving up on him. It's ludicrous, especially in this day and age where there's not as much power in the game. And he is raw power. And he started off really well in the minors. I think he had 6 extra base hits in his first 30 at-bats. And I love to see it. And look, Michael Young didn't even become a full-time Ranger. The all-time Ranger hit leader didn't even become a full-time player until he was 24. Gallo's 2 years younger than that. So I think there needs to be some patience here. But in terms of talking about Nomar Mazara, I think we should also talk about Joey Gallo and keep his whole outlook in perspective as well.
They're completely different players. Joey Gallo's ceiling is higher than Nomar Mazara's because of that ridiculous raw power. But his floor is considerably lower than Mazara's, which, just to sort of clarify, Mazara's a better bet to be what he's going to be than Gallo. But if they both turn into what they can be and hit their ceilings, Gallo's the more singular talent. I think, and you hit on it, people got all up in arms that Joey Gallo, that the league figured out Joey Gallo, the big league pitching started to exploit the holes in his swing. Well, he wasn't even supposed to be up last year, and he wouldn't have been if Beltre didn't get hurt until he might have come up in September and gotten 20 at-bats. When he came out, you know, guns a-blazing, goes deep off Kershaw, and everybody's like, wow, you can't ever send Joey Gallo back down, and then he started struggling, and then he even struggled when he went back down in the summer, which I think alarmed a lot of people. What I think fans tend to forget is development takes time, especially when a player has been accelerated like Gallo was last summer, wasn't even supposed to be in the big leagues. I think, you know, you mentioned the extra base hits. His home runs have returned at Round Rock. I think what's maybe even more exciting, I think the organization probably feels this way too, is he is starting, not only cutting his strikeouts down, but you start to see these 7, 8, 9 pitch at bats where Joey Gallo is fouling pitches off. He's not swinging pitches out of the zone. His big problem in the big leagues last summer, once the league got a book on him, was he was swinging through strikes. He wasn't swinging at bad pitches. He was swinging at good pitches, but they, you know, 92, 94 was getting right by him, which didn't make a lot of sense, but his swing is so long. Well, it looks like he's correcting that, and he's extending at bats in the minor leagues, and that's exactly what you want to see. He was doing it in spring training, too, against big league pitching. So I think the news is good on Joey Gallo. It looks like he's making some adjustments, even though none of us are around to see it because it's 200 miles south. But if he gets to the point where he's not a guy that you can throw strikes in the zone to, and he starts to either spoil them or put them over the fence, then he's getting closer to the guy that he was supposed to be than he was late last summer when it looked like he'd fallen off a bit as the league adjusted to him.
Man, you look at the ceilings for Mazara and Gallo and Brinson, who we haven't talked about today, but the young center fielder who will probably be here next year, right?
You know, that's the timetable, hopefully.
What do you think's a good comp for him?
A good comp for Lewis Brinson. You know, if everything absolutely came together, then you're hoping that he's an Adam Jones type player that can do just about everything, include play just an elite center field with, you know, the glove and the arm and the legs. I think maybe a more realistic comp is a Mike Cameron, and people have been saying that for a couple years, where it won't be an extremely high batting average, but he'll hit the ball out of the park, he'll steal bases, and he'll play lockdown center field defense, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It may not be perennial all-star level, but there'll be some all-star games peppered in, and more importantly, when you have a lockdown center fielder, it makes your entire outfield defense better, which makes your entire defense better, makes your pitching better, and you know, I'm a sucker for center field defense. I loved when Leonis Martin was here, it almost didn't matter to me that he was hitting 220 and swinging at pitches that were, you know, a foot out of the zone. The kind of defense he played in center field made him valuable. And I think Brinson has the chance to bring that back defensively to this team when he's ready and he comes up.
Man, I always eat the candy. I always get overly excited about prospects. I just get so fired up about their ceilings. But I can't help but look at those three guys, Mazara and Gallo and Brinson and think, man, I hope they don't trade those guys for anything. I like you said, it's very, nothing is untouchable, but man, I hope they're as close to untouchable as could possibly be. You know, my sons are 10 and 8, and I think those three guys, I think they're going to grow up watching their whole career. And for them, it's going to be like my Wando and Pudge and Rafi or whatever. You know, those three guys I think are going to be kind of the faces of this franchise for the next several years, you know, once they arrive and start producing. And I think they're here to stay long term. And I think they're all three going to be legitimate stars in this league.
Well, let me throw in another reason why those three guys may not be traded. It's not just because you look at each of them and say, oh, this guy's untouchable and you just can't afford to trade him for anything. That's not the case. What's important with this team is you've got a handful of big contracts. You've got a couple players that are headed towards that, Odor being one. You're going to have some minimum level contracts to balance that out. And you hope that the minimum level contracts are players that can contribute, that aren't hitting ninth or pitching in the back of the bullpen necessarily. If you've got core players that are making $520,000 a year, if you got two or three of those, well, that enables you to go out and get Sonny Gray or someone like that, because you've created enough balance in your payroll where you can go big on a few players knowing that you've got some core members of the team that aren't making any money on a relative scale.
Man, and you know what? I'm sitting here talking about these young guys, the future of the franchise. I didn't even mention Rougned Odor. He's the same age, right? He's 22, 23.
Yeah, exactly.
So you talk about the faces of this franchise moving forward, not to take anything away from those high-paid guys you're talking about, but you're right. When you can supplement that with guys who are under team control, young, with huge upside, who aren't costing you a ton to be on the roster, boy, you got the makings of something special.
And here comes Dylan Tate, and here's Chi-Chi, and then Luis Ortiz is coming behind him, and you've got Keone Kella in the bullpen. You've got... There's parts of this team all the way around the roster where you could say 5 years from now, when a couple of these veterans that are key right now, when they've either, you know, their game has fallen off or they've even retired, you've got guys coming that should keep this window open for, you know, the foreseeable future.
All right, so in terms of Mazzara, because that's really what our focus is, Nomar Mazzara, 20 years old, lighting it up for the Rangers, got the whole fan base supercharged up and excited. What about you personally? You fired up?
I'm super fired up. I do want to issue just sort of a caution. If he falls off a little bit for an extended stretch about the time that Hamilton's ready to come back or the time that Chu's ready to come back, you know, the fan base shouldn't look at this the way they looked at Gallo last summer. It's a process. What you're seeing right now out of Mazzara and what you saw for the first couple weeks last summer out of Gallo, that's what those guys can be. And they're so young that it takes some time to put it all together and become the consistent type of producer that, you know, locks down a spot in the big leagues. Maybe Mazzara will do that and will never go back down. Maybe he is finished with the minor leagues. But that may not be the case, and that doesn't mean he's a failure. It just means that he was brought up sooner than he was supposed to be, and he may have some things to work out, and he's the kind of kid that I have a lot of confidence that if there are things he needs to make major adjustments to.
Man, I love talking baseball with the great Jamie Newberg. All right, this has been another episode of Spitballin', a Texas Rangers podcast. For Jamie Newberg, I'm Ben Rogers. Until next time, happy baseball, everybody.